beyond the statement of the Mishnah to the source of why the phenomenon is there. You see, you have to realize that man is created. Man is a combination of a malach and a behemoth, Chazal say. Combination of an animal and an angel. Now, the source of man's energies, the reason why man is capable of being such a high creature, is because something happens to his instinctual nature, which permits him to convert the instinctual energy into a higher form. See, it permits him to convert the instinctual energy into a higher form. And I think we spoke about it in the Adam Rishon. A lot of this is on the Adam Rishon tapes. Now, what happens is that man really cannot fully, this cannot fully satisfy his instinctual nature like an animal can. An animal, he's raised from early life, the instincts start working, and they keep on developing more and more. And man, there's a stage in which everything is stopped. There's a blockage of the instincts. And then he has, because the instincts are blocked from their original sources, so he could use that energy. Can be used for a higher purpose. As a matter of fact, there's a Zohar on this that really describes it very nicely. The Hora Uchman, where the source of the energies of man, very nice piece of Zohar. And what happens is that if it wasn't for the blockage, you see, if it wasn't for the instinctual blockage, so what would happen is that man would always be instinctual. Now, once you have the blockage, what happens is that the instinct cannot really reach. Something prevents the instinct from reaching the satisfaction of its goal. Now, what happens is that it starts looking for substitutes. It starts looking for substitutes of the original object, for the original object. Now, because it's looking for substitutes of the original object, and it's not really working in a natural way anymore, it will never be satisfied. Because whatever it finds, it always thinks, before it gets to it, it always thinks that it's going to enjoy it. Because that's the imagination makes the mistake of thinking that's the object. But once it gets there, it discovers that it doesn't have the enjoyment, and therefore the frustration ensues. That's why the frustration always follows. So man is constructed in such a way. Now, if he wasn't constructed that way, if he was not constructed that way, he would be a tremendous animal, because all the instinctual forces would be satisfied. Because he is constructed that way, he's capable of a very much higher form of life. And he's capable of concepts, of thoughts, of living a certain way, of experiencing certain things, certain inner experiences he's capable of, because of the blockage of the emotions, of the from their source.
So would you say?
But simultaneously, because of that, it leaves him in a state of frustration, because what he's looking for is not really what he thinks he's looking for is not really what he's looking for. And that mistake he will always make. But if he wasn't constructed that way, then he'd never reach a higher level. The Talmud Chacham is the person who converts all the energy to the higher level. The average person who can't do that will always live a life of frustration. And there's no other possibility. And you have the question, so why is it that God created man in such a way that, you know, that most people will really live a life of frustration? It's a very sad thing. They'll live a life of frustration. So that's where, unfortunately, the only answer that we have is the Rambam's answer. And the Rambam's answer is that God created man that way for the one person. For that one person who reaches that level. So that all of humanity basically is structured so that there should be an appreciation of Chochmas Elokim, that one person, really. But I want you to understand something. I mean, You have to understand, I mean, it's not as, the view is not as dismal as it sounds. Because, I mean, the Rambam says it without any question, that it's for that one individual. But it does not mean that every other individual has nothing. Because Chazal say, Kol Yisrael Yesh Lom Chelek Lom Abo. It means every one of us, every person. Even though he's not on that level. So, insofar as a person perceives Chochma, even a person who's not on not a real tzaddik gamer or a chassid, he whatever he perceives of chachmas Hashem, he partakes of an eternity, and since he partakes of something eternal, so therefore, insofar as he partakes of it, his existence is eternal. But nevertheless, so why did the Rambam say that the reason why God made man that way is because of we should have a part of eternity. You see, we should have a part of eternity. Why did the Rambam have to say it's for the one person? He says, in this one person, if you look at the Rambam's language, it's very rare. Very rare. It's like the person who came to Simchas Beis HaShoeva. Right? Or Simchas Beis HaShoeva. He saw all of Klal Yisrael, and he says that all these people were created because of me. Benzoma. So why? Because he perceived in himself, a tremendous inner joy in every moment of his life, an inner satisfaction, full satisfaction, and he knew that nobody else has it. And he said that everybody, the whole world, all these people who are basically frustrated in life, basically live a life of frustration. This min had to be created so that one individual could have a really great life, and that was himself. So that's the memory of Chazal. Not egoistic. It's sad, realistic. Right. So why is it realistic? Oh yeah. So the question still stands. Why did the Rambam have to say it's for that one benzono? What did he say? We all partake of eternity. Insofar as we were mekayim the mitzvos, and you know what, there's an interesting Rashi in this week's Sedra. Rashi says, Osachai Asher Tochu, so Rashi says, Loshen Chayim. Chayim, life. So Rashi says, these mitzvos, these commandments of not eating the various animals were given to the Jews because they're considered Chayim. They're considered alive and Dveikim B'machom. They consider, they cling to God. He says, but the other nations don't have these commandments. They can eat the chazal. He says, why? It's like a doctor that visited two patients. One patient was critically ill. The doctor told him, eat whatever you want. Might as well enjoy yourself. The other person wasn't critically ill. The doctor said to him, be careful what you eat. Don't eat this. Make sure you eat that. He says, that's the same thing over here. So what is the pshat? The pshat is that none of these things in the Torah, people have a very immature idea. They think that chaza, they think that these things are inherently bad and right and harmful, and that's the case. You're saying something very bad about God, because God likes Goyim too. God created Goyim also. Say God doesn't care about his creatures, it's impossible. No sin lechem l'chol basar, rachma l'chol masar. Animals are the animal kingdom God is concerned about. So why is he's concerned in a different way than man? But I mean to say he's concerned that they should survive. So God doesn't create anything unless the survival of the object that he creates is inherent in the species itself. So therefore, that being the case, so if you would say that these things are bad, you'd be saying that God doesn't really like Goyim. So the answer is no. The answer is that you have a very childish attitude about the mitzvahs. You look at them as painful things, and look at them as keeping away from bad things. You don't realize that this is the thing that raises you to a certain level. Dveikus b'makom. So if it's possible to have dveikus b'makom, then these mitzvahs make sense. But if it's not possible by a guy where it's not possible for him in his way of life to have dveikus b'makom, so all the mitzvahs will be worthless. All the mitzvahs of the Torah will be worthless. It's an interesting thing. I mean, you say, that if he'd have all the mitzvahs, he wouldn't be a guy anymore. It's an interesting thing. I mean, if he had all the mitzvahs, he wouldn't be a guy. The answer is that you see that it's necessary to have a certain level of person, a certain level of Adam for the mitzvahs. If a certain level of Adam is not there, then the mitzvahs don't do anything. It's nothing. It's like the Rambam says in Hilchos Tshuva, that a person who is a Rasha, he does mitzvahs and God throws it back in his face. David is a God, doesn't answer him, doesn't listen to him. It means, what is the Rambam? It's a mashal. What does the Rambam mean? Ram means that for him there's no benefit. You need a certain level of Adam in order for the mitzvahs to work. But the purpose of the mitzvahs is for the level, not for the particular actions. Particular actions in themselves are neither good or bad. It's the state that it brings to it. That's the purpose. So therefore, with regard to Klal Yisrael, that's the purpose of all the mitzvahs, is to engender that state. So you see that once the state is created, it's created for all of Klal Yisrael. So why does the Rambam have to say that the one person is only it's only the one person? Yeah, anybody? In other words, what it means is that God would never have created the world if it wasn't for that one person. That's true. But now that he did create it for that one person, so he wouldn't create it for average people, even though average people can partake of eternity. But the point is, God would not create a creature who inherently suffers. Wouldn't make such a creature. So therefore, even though these imperfect creatures can partake of eternity, but God would never make such a creature. He would never make it. The only reason that God's actions are perfect, so therefore the only creature that he would make is one that could have total enjoyment. One that could be in a state of total bliss. That's the perfected man. For him, the world was created. It means, what does it mean for him, the world was created? It means that God would never perform the act of creation for everybody else. Even though they have a chelek melam haba, he still wouldn't do it. Because since his actions are perfect, so perfect means that everything fits in perfectly. In other words, an animal exists, it lives in a perfect environment for what it needs. Man has to exist in a perfect environment where he's totally happy. And that's only that one person. But now that God created the world, everybody can partake of eternity insofar as they can. Doesn't mean that they're not going to partake of eternity. But that has nothing to do with the question of why God created it. Two separate questions. You see. So both are true. Kol Yisrael v'Eshet Lechem Olam Haba, it's true. But the world would not be created for those. For Kol Yisrael, the world would not be created. It would only be created for the one perfect individual. But now that he exists and the world was created for him, everybody can partake of eternity. We have to appreciate that one person. He gave us eternity. Yes?
Let me understand. When you speak,
it is very right. One philosopher wrote. See, you have to understand that this view that the Rambam presents is a view that's not very popular. I mean, I know this question has been asked many times, and I've never seen anybody give the Rambam's answer beside the Rambam. Even though the Rambam actually says it, but most people can't accept that view. Why? Because people have to live with a certain measure of egocentricity. And to say that the whole world was created for one person and that person is not me is very, very hard to take.
Just say it is
you. That's another possibility. That's another possibility.
That's right.
But it seems most of humanity weren't that crazy, because otherwise they wouldn't have had to give different answers. But the point is, the Rambam's answer is a realistic one. Look, we're here, and there's nothing we can do about it. We're here, there's nothing we can do about it. The person has to make the best of the best of the situation. The person has to make the best. No, Adam Shlo Nivra, but Misha Nivra Yasi Vatara. For most of mankind, it's better that he wasn't created. But now that he was created, he'd be foolish if he wouldn't make the best of the situation. 1.18 is, one philosopher wrote very beautifully that if you would know, he speaks about the pettiness of man and how people are involved in envy and people are involved in egotistical goals and and they're concerned about the other, what the other person is, and all the imperfections of man. And he says, very nicely, he says, if a person would know the enjoyment of perfection, if a person would be able to perceive the enjoyment of perfection, even for a few moments, he said he would leave all these things would be nothing. The problem is that he doesn't know how great the enjoyment of perfection is. If you perceive that, everything would look like nonsense, absolute nonsense. That's why when Benzoma said the whole world was created for me, he was the person that perceived what the enjoyment of the perfection, how great human life could be. Human life is capable of being the most enjoyable, most pleasurable that can be envisioned. I mean, to compare an animal's enjoyment with the humans is like ridiculous, because there's so much energy that's available to man. If that energy is used for perfection, then man's in a state of absolute bliss. And everything else is like utter nonsense. That was Benzoma. So the reason why people are steeped in the in these things is because they don't perceive what the what real enjoyment is. Like the Rambam talks about Olam Haba. Olam Haba, he says, all the Nevi'im were misnabei l'masa Mashiach. But Olam Haba, ayin lo raza lo kim zlofecha. A person cannot even perceive, begin to perceive, that's Olam Haba. There's even more, there's even further away. What the enjoyment of Chachma really is. It's even greater than the enjoyment that a Chachma has in this world. The enjoyment that a Chachma has in this world is still a psychological enjoyment. But the enjoyment of Chachma when it is removed from the guf, removed from the body, is an enjoyment which the Rambam says we don't even perceive its nature. Of course, it's completely different. It's completely type of thing, a different type of thing. Yes? To perceive it itself, you have to be in a certain level, no question about it. Just to get a glimpse of it. The existence of the Jews have the Torah, to break the cash flow into your right. And the Goyim have the Jews to represent the true ideas and to bring them, to remove them out of their bad state. And that's why it's such a terrible avera when a person makes a chilul Hashem. A chilul Hashem means that the person acts in a way that the guy looks at the Jew, he looks at the Jew in a bad way, so what you're doing is you're destroying the entire Bria. See, a person is like this. A lot of Chazal and a lot of things that are said in Kabbalah that have to be understood in this way. And like the Kabbalists say, when you're doing a very, you destroy the whole world. You destroy the worlds. Worlds are destroyed. What does it mean, worlds are destroyed? Worlds are destroyed as a marshal. But in actuality, it means that God created the world, and there's all the Brias, all the people that are created here. And if you act in a way where you create a Chilul Hashem, and you turn these people away from the possibility of ever perfecting themselves, it's tantamount to destroying God's creatures. So it means that all these people's lives are lost. All these lives are lost. It is not God's will that these lives should be lost. And man, the Jew, is in a situation where he has a bechira. He can act in a way where the guy will recognize that there's something here, be drawn to the ideas, be drawn to the true ideas, in which case he can perfect himself also. Or he can act in a way which the guy will be turned away from the true ideas. And the Chilul Hashem is also among Jews. That's even worse, because then you destroy the very nation itself. But Chilul Hashem is among Goyim too. It's not just among Jews. Al Shmish in Eschal B'Goyim, there's many, many psukim in Tanakh that show that Chilul Hashem is among Goyim also. But what's the idea? The idea is that all these people, all of humanity was created for, to give them the opportunity. That's God's will. But God gave us the ability to make certain decisions. It's a strange phenomena. But we can't understand God's, we can't understand God to know why God created such a phenomena. But that's the way the phenomena works. So insofar as a person turns people away, he's Mechal Hashem, and he wastes the lives of all these creatures. That was the tefillah of Moshe Rabbeinu. Lama yomu Mitzrayim lema. Why should the Egyptians say, Bara hotziyam, laragasa baharim? Spoke about that. It means is that that Paro said that it could never be, this can't work, this religion can't work. It's impossible. You can't have a religion like that. That's so sublimated, that there's no aggression. It's impossible. So Moshe Rabbeinu said to God, he said, if the Jews are destroyed, Paro will say, you'll see, I was right. Such a religion cannot be successful. It's too far removed from primitivism, you'll never be successful. And that would be, that was the greatest tefillah that was ever said, was that tefillah of Moshe Rabbeinu. That was the greatest tefillah, because that saved all of us. And what was that tefillah? The idea in the tefillah was that if the Jews are destroyed, then Paro will say, you see, the Egyptians will say, that religion is impossible. That religion is impossible because the Jews will destroy. See, people don't judge by the ideas. They judge by the situation. If it's not successful, I say, that's it. It didn't work. And then all the people would be lost. All the people would be lost. They'd never have an opportunity to recognize the truth. So Moshe Rabbeinu said to God, how can you do it? You destroy all the Jews? That will prove that this religion can't work. They'll be turned away completely. Chilul Hashem. And God said, you're right. Because Moshe Rabbeinu recognized that, so he saved all of Klal Yisrael. Now, that was the Tfilas Moshe. Yes?
Question.
Really, the truth of the matter is that the only way that the people will recognize the Torah is like the Pasuk says, Ki yichach maskam v'naskam leini amin, ashi yishma neskola chukum eila, v'amur rakam novim v'chachan ha'gai gadol hazeh. Because people say that, recognize the chachma. But people who take the system and make nonsense out of it, I mean, they equate it to Geish ideas. I mean, this is a total destruction of the system.
Do they have interfaith?
Why was Avraham Avinu being misspelled for the whole of Sodom? Because what he was saying was that a society that can tolerate 10 tzaddikim is a different type of society. It's not as far. Lot was saved. He was one man. They took him out. He wasn't misspelled to save the tzaddikim. He was misspelled to save the whole society. Because there's a relationship between the society and the individuals who make up that society. I spoke about that one time when we spoke about Moshe Rabbeinu. And Moshe Rabbeinu and Klal Yisrael form one group. Really, they form one group in a sense. The Moshe Rabbeinu is a separate individual, but him and the society of Klal Yisrael, they relate together in a way that it's one group. That's why Moshe Rabbeinu was raised to a higher level, all of Klal Yisrael was saved. He saved all of Klal Yisrael. So there's gzeras on societies and there's gzeras on individuals. God judges nations, God judges individuals. How he judges, I mean, we don't have any concept, but we know that there's two different types of judgments. The judgment of Sodom was a judgment on a people. It wasn't a judgment of individuals. Except for Lot. So basically, to sum up Rabbi Yeshua's memra was that these inherent expressions of human frustration, a person should be aware every day. He used to say these three things every day. A person should be aware every day of these human frustrations. So he shouldn't allow them to get out of hand. There's a certain point where you reach satisfaction as far as possible. Beyond that point, there's a tremendous abyss where if the person gets caught up in that, it could lead to the whole destruction of his personality. That's why he used to say these three things every day. That's the memory. Okay. The next Mishnah is Yud Beis. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Yehi Momen Chavercha Chovev Alecha Kishalach. The money of your friend should be as dear to you as your own money. That's one. V'haskein Atzmacha Luma Torah. And you should try to Haskin Asmachal means to prepare yourself, make the proper preparations to learn Torah. She'ena Yerushalach, because it's not an inheritance. Torah is not an inheritance. Like Rabbeinu Yonah says that many people think if they come from families of Talmidei Chachamim, so they have a certain feeling that they have it basically because they come from those families. No, it's not a Yerusha. Can't be given over by an inheritance. Money is a Yerusha. That, of course, comes from a wealthy family, so he inherits it. He's ahead of the game. There's no question about it. And Torah is not ahead of the game at all. He may be in a better situation, but that's not doesn't mean that he's really ahead. So that Torah is not a Yerusha law. That's where Rabbeinu Yonah explains it. V'chol ma'asecho yi l'shem shemayim, and all your actions should be for one purpose. Shem shemayim. All right? That term is often overused. Shame Shemayim. Everybody intends L'shem Shemayim. What does it really mean, L'shem Shemayim? We'll take a look at his analysis. The Rambam gives a definition of what it means, L'shem Shemayim. What does it mean that the person's, all the person's actions should be L'shem Shemayim? What is L'shem Shemayim? Most people have an idea that the basic idea is that whatever their fantasies are, that's L'shem Shemayim. The first one most people don't explain too much. The first one was that other people's money should be as important to you as yours. And the Rabbeinu Yonah adds one thing. He says, L'kayim bo mitzvas bala. He says that you should fulfill with the other person's money what the other individual wants. The mitzvah, L'kayim bo mitzvas bala, to fulfill the commandment of the owner of the money. An interesting thing. What is Rabbeinu Yonah adding over there? I mean, it would seem like the Mishnah says it's self-evident what the Mishnah means. That another person's money should be as important to you as your own. He says, no, l'kayim ba mitzvahs balav, to fulfill the commandment of its own. Alright? It means like... What is the basic idea? What is the basic... How could a person really care about another person's property as much as his own? And we know that it's not too common a phenomenon. I mean, if a person borrows somebody else's car, so his main concern is that he should bring it back in one piece. But to drive it as carefully as he drives his own car, that I don't think you'll find too many people that will do that. Especially if he figures if he rips out the engine a little bit, I mean, he guns it down a little bit, nothing to real, not really important. He might not do it his own car that way, but it would take a few years till anybody would notice anything, and there's no way that it could be causing any real serious harm. I mean, that's not Yehimam and Chavercha Chavalach Kishalach. Kishalach means that you treat it exactly like you treat your own property. Not with the idea, not because you're concerned about how you're going to return it to the individual. So he won't be able to notice that you did anything with the object that's not proper. So what's the... how do you reach the level of Yehi Mama Chaver Chachov Allah Tishalach? What does it mean? See? Now Rabbeinu Yonah adds, he says, L'kayim bo mitzvahs bolav. What he's adding is that it's not just to take care of the property. Take care of the property, what you consider taking care of the property. No, you have to take care of the property the way the owner wanted. What he wants. What he wanted. In other words, you're taking care of an estate, and it's not yours. And you have no ideas about how to take care of the estate. No good. That person had a certain mishigas that he wanted this this tree to be over here, whatever it is. He wanted it. You make sure that you carry it out. It's his wishes, according to his wishes. That's where Rabbeinu Yonah adds, according to his wishes. Of course, if it's harmful, then I mean, they should inform him about it. But it's his money, it's his property. His property means that it's his object, that he could do what he could express his own capriciousness on his object. And you should try to make sure that the object conforms to his caprice. You see, to his, the way he wants it. So that's his object. Over here, you can't be a philosopher when it comes to the other person's properties. You can't say, here, it's nonsensical. What does he need this? Like, who cares, huh? No, what kind of a Mrs. Ball? If he wants it, that's the way he wants it. He likes things that way. Of course, you'll say, that's crazy. I don't live that way. I do the things the other way. No, you have no right to say that. You have to go according to his way of the way he wants to live. It's his property. You're in his house. You can't say that it's nonsensical. Well, I don't have these things in my house, so therefore I don't have to worry about it. I'm using his house. I don't have to worry about taking care of this. That's not important. No, to him it's important. You have to be careful with it. L'kayim bo mitzvahs bolo. That's Rabbeinu Yonah adds. But what is the basic notion behind the whole idea? How could you really treat another person's property like it's your own? I mean, it's almost inhuman. It's almost inhuman. So how can you do it, really? What's the idea? It's his right. His property. We have to answer the basic question. Good question. Let's say a man says, borrow my car, but I don't want you to drive over 10 miles an hour. And you say, look, you're a mechanic, and you know it's not going to do any harm to the car. Or the guy says, look, please do me a favor. Don't gun the motor. And drive it quietly. Look, nothing's going to happen. See? Thing is that you're not allowed to do it. Why? In your case, even better. It's even where you know that it's not harmful. The answer is, what's the idea of Yehi Mamon Chaver Chachava Lach Kishalach? What does it mean, really? What does it mean, Yehi Mamon Chaver Chachava Lach Kishalach? What's the basic principle? How could it be? What's the answer? The answer is, really, this member means one thing. It means the recognition of justice. Justice. Without, what it's saying is, that there is no such thing really as justice unless you have the recognition of God. That's basically what the member turns out after the full analysis. What it means is that why should the other person's money be as important as mine? So the answer is because in terms of justice, since there is such a thing as real justice, so his property and mine are both on the same level in the system of justice. So if there is no justice, so then I say that all there is my own desire. I can't rob the other person, because if I rob him, he'll rob me back. That's a practical type of justice. That's really the justice of a government. Governmental justice is nothing more than a there's a mutuality. There's a mutuality of interests which result in a system of justice. There's a name there for it. Yeah. Social contract. Right. Social contract. That's what it is. That's governmental justice. In governmental justice, if I borrow another person's car, I really don't have to treat it as if it's my own. As long as I give it back to him in a way that he's very satisfied. If I did something that may cause problems 6 months or a year from now, who cares? Doesn't matter. If I skidder with his tires will wear out a few weeks earlier, not my problem. He doesn't know. Social contract's perfect. Everybody's happy. Everybody's happy and the society goes on. It's fine. It's very good. But if you maintain that there's what? Right. But if you maintain that there's a real system of justice, that means not simply that you're making it as a mutual agreement between you and other people, because you don't want them to destroy you, so you won't destroy them. See? But it means that people have inherent rights. Inherent rights. And as much as the Constitution can say that people have rights, it's all nonsense, because who's the Constitution to decide what rights they have? But the Constitution is not saying that there's such things as inherent rights. They can't make either. If you maintain human beings don't have rights, they don't have rights. What the Constitution means by human rights, it means that we live in a way, we insist that you live in a way as if there is such a thing as inherent human rights. That's what the Constitution dictates. But the Constitution can't dictate human rights. That's out of the sphere of government. What are they, religion, philosophy? It's ridiculous. Of course, the kids in school, they tell everybody, that we have human rights. Our Constitution discovered the idea of human rights. Now, all they're saying is that you have to live in such a way as if, in this country, you have to live in such a way as if every human being has rights. But
they were religious.
Yeah. They took it from that. Yeah. That's right. But as a government, the function of the government is not can't dictate philosophies. Government can dictate law, governmental law. Can't dictate philosophical realities. That's outside of their realm. They were intelligent people, the founding fathers. They were intelligent people. Founding fathers were very intelligent. They knew definition. A lot of them were intelligent. And they knew when they formulated pretty precise, definitively. They're very good at that. They worked on it. But there's a big difference between the governmental system and the Yahadus. That's the difference. The difference expresses itself in this member. Governmental system is very intelligent, very intelligently put together. They put it together very intelligently, but you have to realize it has inherent limitations. What's the limitation? The limitation of the governmental system is that it's law. It's legality. What is another person's rights in America? Another person's rights is a legal entity. It's a legal entity. It's not an inherent entity, it's a legal entity. If that's the case, a legal entity means as long as you stay within the bounds of the law or the purpose of the law. I mean, purpose law becomes a big issue also. whatever. But the as long as you stay within the bounds of the purpose of the law, certainly if you're in the bounds of the spirit of the law, you have nothing to worry about. Okay? And this is... ...between government law. Because Yadis doesn't just dictate a system of law. It's not just a legal system. But it's a religious, it's a philosophical system. So when Yadis says that another person has rights, it's not just a matter of practicality. Another person has rights means that God gave him these rights. It means that there is a source for the whole system that you see, and the source for the system is God, and Yadis tells you that the man's rights is a reality, just as real as everything else that exists. Because the source of all reality, who created man, if there is a source for reality that creates man and gives man, each one, his place, and if there's a source for reality, every individual has a place in the universe, because he was created by God, he was created by a source of reality, so that place is a realistic entity. It's not simply a legal entity. It's a realistic entity. If it's a realistic entity, so then if I don't treat my friend's money as if it's mine, if I don't treat it as if it's mine, it's a denial of the of that realistic entity, which is a denial of God. So you see, the only real justice is possible. The only real justice that is possible is with God, with the acceptance of the idea of God. If there is no acceptance of the idea of God, of the existence of God, there is no possibility for justice. All justice will just be a compromise and a mutual agreements. That's all. But no real justice. The only way you could have real justice is through a belief in God, because since he is the source of the creation, therefore he created each individual, he gave each individual rights. If there's no God, what rights do you have? Ooh, where? What? No such thing as rights. Who's giving out these rights? There has to be somebody giving out the rights, establishing the rights. The establishment of the rights can only be from the source of reality, the one who creates these entities. He gives them certain rights and puts them to exist in certain limits. But if there is no source for our existence, if a person doesn't accept God, there's no source for our existence. So then it's completely arbitrary. You can make government the law, yeah, fine. But there's no real justice. The moment I could do something and I can get away with it for my own purpose, fine. It will be foolish to keep it. And the only reason the person will keep would be maybe he's guilty, sense of guilt or something else. But it really will be foolish. But if reality dictates, if there is a source, a realistic source, then I'm breaking reality. When I'm not careful with my friend's money, it's a breach in the reality principle. Because there is a realistic right that this individual has. Insofar as he exists, just like I exist, and God gave him a certain realm of existence within which he should exist, that realm is his. Because he simply exists. And if I don't treat his object as mine, I'm not on the level where I can perceive objective justice, real justice. That's the perception of real justice. And the Mishnah says that what the Mishnah is saying is that you should reach the level of an appreciation of true ultimate justice. That's the memory of the Mishnah. It's only possible. That's the difference between Yadus and between any governmental system of justice. Governmental systems are arbitrary and they're compromises. They're agreements. In Yadus, it's a reality. That's the difference. Yes? That answers what? So therefore, if the person, now what Rabbeinu Yonah says is l'kayim bo mitzvahs ba'olav, means as follows, that since God gave him the right with his property to do with it as he sees fit in any crazy shape or form or manner that he desires, so you have to abide by that right. And therefore, if he tells you not to run his car over 10 miles an hour, even though you know it's not going to harm the car by running it more, you're violating his inherent right of ownership. And that inherent right is something that God gave him. So it's a violation of a God-given right and a violation of justice, the system of justice. That's what Rabbi Yossi said. Rabbi Yossi said you should be on a level, a higher level, than just recognizing justice on a practical scale. See? But the recognition of a real system of justice, a real objective justice, that's the number. We're up to Rabbi Yossi Omer. Parachaining your days. Yehi mamon chavercha chov v'alecha kishalach. So we explain what it means is that in order to recognize another person's rights over his property, a person has to recognize that there is a God, and that God allots to each individual whatever is his. In other words, ethics is a reality. There's a reality of ethics. The person doesn't believe in a creator, so then there really is no ethics. Ethics is just a matter of a practical proposition. You don't want to harm somebody, or else it's a matter of following your emotions. In which case, somebody else has other emotions, he doesn't have to follow that. But if a person accepts that there is a deity, there's a God, so that means that God designates to each creature that he creates, he gives him a realm which belongs to him, which is allotted to him, and which he has a right to function within. So then, if he should make a breach in that in the other person's area, break into the other person's area, infringe on his rights, what he's actually doing is he's distorting the whole structure of the creation which God created. So in that way, ethics is a reality. Ethics is a reality. Otherwise, ethics is either it's a practicality, or else it's people like it's nice, it's good to be nice, but there is no the basis for it. Well, they like being nice, they feel happy being nice. But other than the shallow emotion, there's no basis for it. So there's no such thing really, as ethics without God. Ethics without God does not exist. It's an impossibility. Okay, so that's why it says Yehi mamon chavercha chov v'alecha kishalach. Because in terms of the if it's just an emotion, so it can't be chov v'alecha kishalach, because every human being's emotions primarily reside in their own in themselves. It's for themselves, so it can't be kishalach. It's an impossibility. That's why psychologists say v'aftel recha kamach is a psychological impossibility. True, it's a psychological impossibility, but it's not a philosophical impossibility. Depends what you mean. If you mean that you should really have as much emotional love towards somebody else as towards yourself, that's impossible. But if it means recognizing philosophically the fact that the other person is a creature of God, and that he is the same as you, he's created by God in the same manner, and he has a certain area of rights and which are allotted to him, divinely allotted to him, just like you do, then it's possible. That's Yehi mamon chavercha chov v'alecha kishalach. So if it's the only way it could be chov v'alecha kishalach is through the recognition of the reality, an ethical reality. That's what it means. The recognition of an ethical reality. That's the only way it's possible. Otherwise, the psychologists are right. It's a psychological impossibility. Okay? So now we have Vahaskin Atzmachal Umotara. Vahaskin Atzmachal Umotara. So Rabbeinu Yonah says that it means Haskin Atzmachal Amidos Tovos. Kidei Shetumot Es HaTorah. Tagia Al Mailas HaChasidus. Kidei Omar V'lo Amar Etz Chasid. Alright? So in other words, what the Rabbeinu Yonah is saying is, one time expounded upon this, that real perfection is a combination of two things. It's a combination of the intellect, but it's not just the intellect. And Rabbeinu Yonah says
that he quotes a pasuk. It says, the pasuk says that Ramos paskin mishlech of dollar Ramos le'evil chachmos, that for an evil, an evil means a person that is straight off the path. So Ramos level chachmos, chachmos are very high for the evil, they're too high, he can't, it's beyond him. Bishar lo yiftach piyu, bishar always means whenever there's an intellectual debate, a chachma, an intellectual debate in Torah. Bishar lo yiftach piyu, he will not open his mouth when people are talking about Torah. When Talmid Chacham are talking, he has to be quiet. See? Then the next pasuk says, Machashev lo hareya, a person who thinks, whose intention is to do evil, lo baal mezimos yikro, they will call him, he will be called by people, by a person who is sly, shrewd, will have a name as being shrewd, which means dishonest. Eventually he's going to have a name as being dishonest. Alright? Now why should that be so, really? Mechashev Loreya means the person is very intelligent. Very intelligent. See, the Rabbeinu Yonah brings these two psukim to show something. He wants to show you that the person who was an evil, the person who was considered one who was gone off the path, is really not because he's unintelligent. Because you see, it says Mechashev Loreya, he plans deceitfully to do evil. And lo baal mezimos yikro, people will call him, he's going to develop a name, people will know, they're going to call him a very sly, shrewd, dishonest individual. So the Rabbeinu Yonah says, so you see, the man is very sly and he's very shrewd, he's very intelligent. The only thing is that he never reached chachma. So therefore Rabbeinu Yonah says that the way, what Rabbeinu Yonah says is basically is that in order to reach chachma, it requires a certain amount of interest, inherent interest in the area. And in order to have that inherent interest, a person must perfect his midos. If a person does not perfect his midos, his emotions, there is no inherent interest. The closest you can come to it is lo lishma. Lo lishma is because of the area. And Rabbeinu Yonah says that then he can never reach that level unless it's a natural interest. Any other motivation can carry him a certain amount, but it can never carry him to the level which he would be at if it was just a natural inherent interest, just a natural love of the area. That natural love is something which cannot be produced artificially, but it's something which must be inherent in his nature. And in order to have that nature, in order to find that expression, there's only one way he could do it, and that is to perfect himself in terms of his midos, in terms of his character traits. That's what it means. Haskin atzmacha lo motara, according to Ben Yonah. It means that the person should perfect himself. If you want to learn Torah, I mean, why do you have to perfect yourself? Sit down and learn Torah. The answer is it's not the same learning of Torah. Not the same learning of Torah. I read a book recently on people who are certain people who are very, very wealthy, extremely wealthy. And they say that those people who are extremely wealthy, they have several characteristics that are in common. So then they give, gives you certain attributes of gaining immense wealth. One of them is that you should be ready to spend a lot of time in it. And I say it's not that it's a necessity. I see most of the people that are very wealthy spend most of their life in it. I mentioned some of the multimillionaire tycoons who spend men in their 70s or 80s, and they spend, 14 hours a day in it, 7 days a week. They never stop. They say, you see, that in order to achieve such great wealth, you have to spend a lot of time in it. The truth of the matter is, it's wrong. It's not that you have to spend a lot of time in it. It shows you that that's where their whole interest lies. That's why they spend so much time in it. They hate vacations, these people, and everything that the Hamon thinks of, that the laity think of, the average person thinks of, that he would do if he had money, they do just the opposite. These people do just the opposite. So the truth of the matter is that the average person, yeah, the average person is, it's like a catch-22. He really can't achieve wealth because he really doesn't care that much for the activity of attaining money. What he wants is the result. So he only wants the result. So it's very difficult to go through the pain of the activity. So he can't achieve it. Those who are very, very wealthy, they really don't care for the money itself. For them, it's the activity of acquiring more money that they're interested in. It's the activity itself. So they have an inherent interest in the activity, and that's why they do it day and night, and that's why they accumulate so much money. You see, it's a strange phenomenon. The ones that don't have it want it, and they can't get it. And the ones that have it don't really care for it. Strange phenomenon. So nobody really enjoys money. But the that's right. They simply, for them, it's not important. It's not important. The money itself is not important. I mean, the big tycoons, the money's not important. Now, the reason, so it's not a matter of hard work. It's a matter of where the natural interest lies. If a person's in an area. And these people, they say they're intelligent people, but they're not really abstract geniuses. It's just that day and night they're involved in the area of business and making money. A person's involved in an area day and night, and all his interest is directed to that area, and he keeps waiting for an opening, and years go by, and all of a sudden he finds his opening, he moves in, and he makes the big kill. You see? So that's a natural result of his interest and his involvement. Similarly, Lahavdil, of course, in Torah, you have the same phenomena. A person who is interested in perfection, his ideas are really his treasure, and he's enjoying the world of ideas. So this person is in it day and night. Yom v'layla, it's a natural interest on his part, and you cannot compare. You cannot compare. The artificial would be, I think that's a good example from the monetary system, the financial situation. A good example from there to here. I mean, you see the people that really, really aren't involved, I mean, how much do they achieve in terms of financial success? Very little, very little. But the person who achieves the great, great wealth is the one that's involved in it. It's a natural thing for him. He lives it, he breathes it, day and night. The same thing, Lahavdil, with regard to Talmud Torah, that's the same way it is. There's no comparison between the person who is involved in it, Yomam Valayla, natural interest, his mind is naturally involved, and he's looking and searching all the time. This person, he will come across ideas, because his mind is naturally searching. But an individual has to force himself, like a person has to force himself to make money, has to force himself to go to work. Not going to have that much success. Force himself. Not going to really accomplish much. So that's why the Mishnah says, if you would be wise, you would do the following. Haskein atzmacha l'matara. You wouldn't just sit down and open a Gemara, because you're not going to achieve that much by forcing yourself to sit and learn for several hours. But the way, ultimately, to really gain in chachman, gain in knowledge, if that's what you value, is to be haskein atzmacha. To change your nature and improve your midos. Once you improve your midos, then you could be involved naturally in the search of chachma. And on that level, that quality there is no substitute for. That quality could take a person to the greatest heights that he can achieve within, of course, his limited abilities. But there's a tremendous difference between the person who's involved for extraneous motivation or the person who's involved inherently, that's his involvement. I mean, Gdol Yisrael wasn't a matter of learning, they had to learn. It was just a natural thing, they couldn't stop. Natural involvement. That's what it means. Haskein atzmacha l'matara.
It has to be hand in hand, right?
What he means to say is, that real, if a person, what keeps a person away from the natural involvement in chachma is his midos. If a person would perfect his midos, he would find that he's naturally involved in chachma. Because that is the greatest enjoyment and the most natural involvement in man. That is the that is the enjoyment, the greatest enjoyment of the soul. So therefore, the only thing that keeps a person away from that involvement is his midos. So if he improves his midos, he'll naturally go for that. See, that's the memory. The point of Benyaz. An interesting side point. It says he says the Mishlei says Machashev lo hareya lo bal mazimos yikra. Talking about an intelligent person like Rabbi Yonasan, it means a person who tries to do evil, so he will be called he will have the name of a Baal Mazimos. Baal Mazimos means a person who is conniving, planning, conniving, deceitful. Those are the adjectives that I refer to him by. So why is that so, really? Why can't you say Machashev Lare? He's a very intelligent man, and he works out a plan. He's very intelligent, works out a plan, and he's able to accomplish what he wants. So why should he acquire the name of Baal Mazimos? So what's the answer? Why can't he be really super intelligent? I'm talking about a very intelligent person. Because see, that's what the Rabbeinu Yonah says of it. Actually, he says that the whole point of these two psukim that he mentions is to show you that it's a matter of where the energy is directed. That the Russia is Ramos level Chachmas. Ramos level means for the Russia, Chachmas is very high. When he sees people talking and learning, he's quiet. B'shali yiftachti, will not open his mouth. All right? Machashev lo areya, lo bal mazimos yikro. So Ben Yana says, you see, they call him Baal Mazimos. Baal Mazimos means very conniving, very intelligent person. So why, so if he's so intelligent, why is it when it comes to Torah that is Bishar Yiftach Piyu? So what does Ben Yana say? It's because where the energy is directed. That's the difference. The difference, the man in Torah is Bishar Yiftach Piyu means it's more than he doesn't talk and learn because he doesn't know learning. He's stupid in learning. You need to explain things to him. It's lo yiftach piyu means zero. That's what it means. So you wonder sometimes, you see, how come this person is so intelligent in every other area? You try to explain to him a simple svar in a Gemara, and you see he can't grasp it. What happened here? Total devastation of the mind. So what's the answer? The answer is he's not stupid. But the energy has been caught, captured by another area. The energy is captured by another area. In this area, there's nothing left. It's Bishar lo yiftach piyu. That's what it means. He can't open his mouth. There's nothing. Zilch. Why? Because the point that Rabbeinu Yonah makes is it's not the intelligence, not raw intelligence that moves a person, but it's the involvement, the amount of energy that really makes a difference. A chacham is a person whose energies are involved in the area. It's not IQ. It has nothing with very little to do with innate intelligence. Very little. It's the involvement. That's what makes a difference. So, yes?
I've taken a vast majority of people, either in the North Desert to experience that.
You're right. No, you're right about that. I mean, most people are caught up in the second way. The involvement in the physical. But you mean most people people who are in yeshivas, people are trying for perfection. That's true. They're involved in, they have both. It's true. But there are very few people in the world that are totally involved in, like the example I gave the big tycoons, that are totally involved in money making. And there are very few people in the world that are totally involved in chachma. And it's true. The extremes are rare, and in between is very great. But that's the idea. V'haskin atzmecha lomo Torah means that a person should not think of learning Torah in terms of accomplishing a conquest over a certain amount of blot, or time even. It's not blot, it's not time, and it's not even mind, not even head. What is it? It's the emotional energy. The energy. The direction of the energy. The energy and the involvement. He's the person. Who's the one that's going to finally open up the Rambam? It's the one whose mind is constantly thinking about the Rambam, bothers him. And he's naturally involved trying to work it out. You know, he's eating, he's sleeping, he's walking, whatever he's doing, his mind is on it. His mind is grinding away. He's the one who's going to see the opening, because that's the way the human soul works. It doesn't work. You cannot pin it down to the person's raw intelligence and you cannot pin it down to any attribute. Time, how much time he puts into it, or how much he wants to, how conscientious he is. Those things are really very small things. Tremendous main difference is expressed, is seen, when you're dealing with an individual whose emotions are involved. So the person who's the evil, the crooked person, the distorted personality, the one who's involved in Taivas Olam, when he hears Divrei Torah, it's not the pshat that he's not intelligent. He's very intelligent. When he hears Divrei Torah, his intelligence level goes from, he can have 140 IQ, it goes down to 10. It means that the energy level is reduced. And there's no energy to be involved in this. He's turned off by this. As soon as he hears the Divrei Chochma, he's completely turned off. That's the truth. That's the phenomenon. That's the pasuk. That the Ramos level Chochma, it's high. B'shali yiftachpil, not open his mouth. It means that this area, there's no energy for this area. You talk to him, he's dead. You're amazed at how unintelligent he is. Why? Because of the low energy involvement. That's what it is. Now, why is it? This is a side question. Why is it, says, Machashev lo rea lo baal mezimos yikro, that a person who wants to do evil, so people will call him a baal mezimos. So call him a conniving, deceitful person. Why can't he really be super intelligent and fool people? I mean, you think these things have been done. You can't fool anybody. I mean, some of the most successful deals are based on fraud. And if you're going to have any ethical restraints, you're not going to be able to do it. You're not going to be able to function. So that's why they said it's a harmful thing. But why is it Mahashu Lareh Lo Balmazim Sikro? What? The answer is very simple. The answer is, because you see, a person who is involved in lahareya to do evil, he is a man of the moment. His interest, the difference, what's the difference really between the chacham and between the person that's the evil? The evil is they're both people that are very, very intense. The examples that they're giving very intense people. The evil is very intense, very serious about his work, not just a lazy evil. That's not much of an evil. Very serious. Now, they're both very intense individuals, but the difference is what has captured them. The evil, what has captured the evil is the physical, and what has captured the chacham is the ideas, the abstract. See? That's the chachma. That's the difference between the two. Now, since what has captured the evil is the physical, so his emotions are drawn to the physical. In the physical, the emotions are drawn very, very powerfully to the here and now. And as the time, and as the future expands, the greater, more he thinks in terms of the distant future, the less strong the attachment is. Physical attachment is always stronger to the here and now, because that's what the emotions recognize. Emotions recognize the here and now, primarily. 5 years from now is more distant. 10 years from now is even more distant. So what happens is like this. That's what it says. It's built in inherently. His destruction is built in. Machashev Lohareya means he's the man of the temporal. It means he's attached to the physical. Physical means the here and now is the greatest. So if he's in trouble here and now, where are all his energies directed? So right now. See? Because that's what the emotions are attracted to. So no matter how intelligent he is, his main concern and his involvement is going to be for the here and now. He can't think too much about what's going to be 10 years from now. The main thing is to get out of the trouble now. That's what he's concerned with. So therefore, he's very intelligent, but since his energies are directed towards this goal, what has to happen is that eventually he's going to be found out, because he's not taking into consideration. He can't take into consideration what's going to be in the future. The future is an abstract reality. He's not the man of the abstract. He's the man of the now, the temporal. So therefore, lo baal mezimos yikro. Eventually, his trickery will be found out, because all he's concerned about is getting out of his situation here and now, or making a gain in the here and now. He sees that he could make a tremendous gain, tremendous profit here and now. That's another word that people talk about and think it can't register, because he's the man of the physical. The man of the physical, what registers is what's right in front of him. The taiva is what registers. And the immediate taiva is always greater than anything that he could think of in the future. So that's why Machashev Lareya, no matter how intelligent he is, but eventually Lo bal mezima sikro. Eventually, he's going to be referred to as a deceitful person because he cannot take that into consideration. It's not possible. And the whole thesis of these two psukim, of course, is that that's what Rabbeinu Yonah brings out. The idea is that man is determined not by his intelligence, but by his energy level of involvement. And that's what the pasuk says, really. That machashev lo rea, the one that wants to do evil, to him his energy is involved in the here and now. That's why it's inevitable that lo bal mezima sikro. It has to work out that way. Cannot be otherwise. If it is otherwise occasionally, it's because the situation sometimes just lends itself accidentally to that. But inherent in the situation is that he's going to be found out. That's the inherent reality. You have to understand, sometimes a thing comes about for two reasons. A thing can come about, the person might not be found out, it's possible. It's not because of what he's trying to say is, he's not trying to say that it could never occur. What he's trying to say is that built into his mechashev l'areya is that lo bal mezima sikro, because he can't take into consideration the future. Future is not really what he's concerned with. Bal Taiva is concerned primarily with the here and now. That's the problem. Zhaskin atzmocho b'midos tovos kidei shetilmor z'torah v'tagia al-mailas ha-chassidus k'do'omar v'lo amor tz'chosid. You see? What he's trying to say is that why is it v'lo amor tz'chosid? What is the meaning? Is because in order to be, it's an impossibility, you see? If in order to reach the level of Chassidus, he has to have Torah, and therefore that's what Haskin asks Cholam Torah, because in order to reach perfection, he has to have Torah. That's long more it's Chassid. So it's necessary in order to have perfection. He has to have Chachma, and Chachma is only possible if it's preceded by the perfection of the Midos. So that the natural interest lies in Chachmah. Natural interest must lie in Chachmah. That's what he's saying. Chachmah itself, forced Chachmah, is not the same thing. So Bali Musi used to say, if a person has a half hour a day, what should he do? So he used to say he should learn Musa, because then he'll find out he has more than a half hour a day. I say it's a joke, but the truth of the matter is that Rabbeinu Yonah really... There is learning pshat and chazal that way. V'haskin ask for lomot time means that the person has to take away. I mean, how can he perfect himself without taking off time? I mean, it's impossible. Could a person perfect himself and work on his meters without taking off time? He has to take off time. So Rabbeinu Yonah says it's worth it. It's worth it. Because the time that he's taking off will result in a different type of involvement in Chachmah. An involvement which leads to a tremendous success. Rather than forcing himself to learn a certain amount of hours a day, it's not the same thing, because the natural desire is not there. That's why he quotes those psukim. That's why he learned shot. It's very good shot. I mean, a person has to have a certain amount of chachma in order to involve himself in perfecting his midos. That's true. But you have to know, I mean, a person has to know at different stages what to be involved in. There's different stages in a person's life. A person has to be involved first in acquiring and understanding the system as best as he could. But then he sees that there's certain points where, certain time where it will be to his benefit to direct his intelligence towards knowledge of himself. And this way he'll gain ultimately a knowledge of Chachmah too. That's what the Mishnah is saying. Of course, I mean, it doesn't mean that a person can't start working on himself first. It's an impossibility. First he has to learn. He has to be able to see where. But there's different times, and the person has to be a Chacham to know when and where he should work on himself to improve himself in different ways. What the right thing to do is at what time? That was a big asik with Chazal. That's why, like the Rambam mentions, Chazal different things that they did for themselves to perfect themselves. That's why the Rambam says you shouldn't learn from them, because they did certain things because of their own situation. The person will try to imitate those things, will be harming himself. The Chazal, you see, from the whole picture of Chazal, that they were very careful to work on. It was a planned thing. It wasn't just arbitrary. Now they knew this is the time to do this, time to do that. They knew in on the road to perfection, they knew how to perfect them. That was the greatness of Chazal. I mean, they were chachomim in how to perfect themselves. That's the difficulty.
You should be able to gauge by certain events that happen in your life if you're really observant about it.
But then he finishes off this Gam Yesh Bechlal Haskin Atzmecha Lumo Torah L'Ma'ira Tanugim Kedei Shil Yilmo Torah Harbeh. Moshe Shaninu, Kachi Dakar Shal Torah, Pas Melach Tocha, Lamayim, Surah Tishdev, Alaris Tishon, Lachayetza, Tichia, ובתורה אתה אומר כי אמר בבעידונים לא סישקם בסוכו החכמה כמו שאומרו. What is he saying over here? Here he's saying that a person should reduce the amount of involvement that he of his involvement in the physical enjoyments. He should actually remove himself from the physical enjoyments because the physical enjoyments have a pull. They draw a person, and once a person is involved in them to a certain degree, so then they demand more. And therefore, he says that this will remove a person's energies from Torah. So basically, I mean, Rabbeinu Yonah, both things tie in. What he's saying is like this. What he's saying is that there are two things that are necessary for a person to really succeed in Torah. One is that he has to perfect himself so that the machinery is working properly and the energy is going towards Torah. That's one thing. Then he has to make sure that the conditions are such. There are two types of corrections that he needs. One is insofar as taking himself and making himself work properly, function properly. That's tikkun amidos. Then once he functions properly, now he has to adjust the situation. That's a minor adjustment already, secondary adjustment. But he says both are included in the memra. Haskin atzmacha v'matara, because it's both one idea. That's the Rabbeinu Yonah. Okay. The Rambam is interesting in this area. Rambam says, Haskin atzmacha lo motara. So the Rambam says something interesting. He says that, Kvar bi'ayinu b'perek hashmini. That means in the Shema Prakam. Inyin ha'achana v'azimon. She'tzorach lo'odom lo'hochin atzmo l'malas. That a person must prepare himself for perfection, malas, improvement. Perfection of the midos. Alright? And you take a look at the Perek Shmini. That's an interesting statement. Now it's like this.
What is
he? He says, Perek Shmini. Perek Hamishi is Kol Masech Yidol Shem Shemayim. That's the second one. But Perek Shmini is Haskin Atzmo Halom Otara. Okay? Now it's like this. He says he efshir sheyivole the odom mitzilas inyono b'teva bal maila v'lo bal chasam. He says it's impossible for a person to be born by nature, to be by nature, an individual that has good qualities or bad qualities. Interesting. Kimo sheyefshir sheyivole the odom b'teva bal malacha min amalachas. Just like it's impossible for a person to be born by nature to be a certain skilled worker. The person can't be a born carpenter. No such thing. Or a born electrician. They don't mean that. When they say born, they mean that what they mean is that it's an exaggeration. It means he has so much natural talent that he's born that way. But they know it's absurd that they don't mean that he really is a born skilled craftsman. That's impossible. Or a born piano player, a born musician. It's an impossibility. All right. What they want to say is that he's so good, it's almost as if that way. Yeah. So he says, however, the Rambam says, but a person, he says, can be born with certain traits which lend themselves to those different skills. He can have naturally born with good dexterity. So therefore, it'll lend itself to being a good carpenter, a good surgeon. Surgeon. So it's a natural thing. So what's natural about it is the inherent trait. That's a very interesting thing. But what's necessary is to learn the skill. So what is the Rambam saying? A very important thing over there. I mean, you can just piss over this Rambam very quickly. Let's get into more what he's going to say. Mm-hmm. But he has already established a very interesting idea, the Rambam. What is the idea? What's the concept? Ordinarily, people don't think that way. People think that there's no comparison between what the Rambam is saying and between the situation of skill. A person can be born with good midos. He has good midos. He's nice. He's kind. He's not a kasson. He doesn't have to work at it. He says, why can't a person be born that way? Why does Ram say it's an EF, should Ram say? יאפשר שיבוא לאדם את תחילת עניינו בטבע בעל מעלו ולא בעל חסרון. It's impossible that a person should be born either as an individual who has milas, attributes, or chasern, his defects. Why isn't it possible? I mean, most people think that, on the contrary, yeah, he's a born tzaddik, he's a tremendous milas, tremendous milas. Why is it? Why does the Rambam say it's impossible? Nobody would make this comparison to Rambam's making over here. People wouldn't compare it to a little carpenter. Carpenter is an acquired skill. It's an acquired skill. The Rambam says it's impossible. Impossibility. What's the answer? The answer is the Rambam had a different idea of Baal Mila than the average person does. See? The average person thinks Baal Mila is naturally kind and naturally good. He listens, he's masmid, whatever it is, all these qualities. Natural things. And the Rambam is saying that a Baal Mila or Baal Chasarn really has to do with Chachma. It has to do with Chachma. In other words, what is a Baal Mila really? A Baal Mila is a skilled individual, a person who is very skilled at the art of directing his soul in the proper manner. That's what a Baal Mila is. It's a skill. A skill can only be acquired. Skill can only be acquired. If you tell me that the perfection of man is his natural predisposition, you see, then you're not in the school of the Rambam. Rambam doesn't know that way. No mila. There is no mida in a person. There's midos. A person is a baal midos, but not a baal milos. That's the difference. He's a baal midos, but not a baal chesronos. Because milos and chesronos have nothing to do. I can't say I have nothing to do, but I mean to say I'm not essentially, I'm not the same as the midos. The midos are the characteristics, but the milos is what the person does with those characteristics. It's like a general that directs his forces. He overlooks the need, he takes a look over the midos, and then he knows precisely what to do, how to handle them, and how to handle reality in order to bring them to the desired goal. That requires skill. That's skill. That requires years of learning, of knowledge, of experience, of being a weathered warrior, to know how to do that, to know how to accomplish that. That is perfection. That's the Rambam's idea of perfection. That's what the Rambam says. Yafshir. It's an impossibility. Sheyivolei ha'adam mitchilas inyano b'teva. Baal Mila, lo Baal Mila, and lo Baal Chasaron. It's an impossibility. That's the Rambam's idea of perfection. Therein, I think, lies the difference between the average person's idea of a tzaddik and the Rambam's idea of a tzaddik. Two different concepts altogether. No such thing as natural is impossible. Natural is just the raw material. But the raw material is not the skilled artisan. Skilled artisan is what he does with the raw material. And it's the same thing with perfection. Perfection is what a person does with the with the raw materials of his nature. That's what perfection is. Perfection is something that has to be acquired. Something that's totally acquired. Completely acquired. Not natural. It's an acquired... It's something which is completely acquired. As a matter of fact, the person who reaches perfection in reality cannot recognize the ideas that he started out with. He's completely changed over. He's actually a different being. It's like the Rambam says in Hilchos Tshuva. That the Rambam says a person that really does tshuva, he says he's a different person. Eino oso ish. He's not the same person that he was before. And the psukim say really by the Nevi'im. By the Nevi'im it says by when they were misnabe, it says, I think by Shaul, doesn't say by Shaul. Right? Pasuk says, you'll be another person. What kind of experience are we talking about? What are you, another person? Why is Navi another person? The answer is when he reaches that level, every natural emotion that he had and every natural feeling that he had, even of what perfection is, all these ideas that he had, he leaves them completely. He sees everything in a totally different way. Totally different way. In a way that he himself when he started his goal, he would never imagine that this is what would turn out of it. It's completely acquired. Completely acquired. It's a different phenomenon. That's really perfection. It's a different idea of perfection. Okay? So according to the Rambam, that's what the Rambam means. V'haskin atzmacha l'ulma Torah, according to the Rambam, means, haskin atzmacha l'ulma Torah means that in order to perfect yourself, l'ulma Torah means perfection, l'ulma Torah means perfection, l'ulma Torah means just to acquire knowledge of a specific taste or a specific gemara. What it means is, l'ulma Torah means to be in the state of total perfection, which is a state of knowledge, a knowledgeable state of l'ulma Torah. So there the Rambam says that it's you have to do certain things, you have to marshal your forces like a general. That's what the Rambam says. That's the Perek Shmini. Okay. That's the same thing over here. A good artisan takes the material, and whatever it is, he fashions it in such a way so that he achieves the goal. With rocks he has to deal one way, bricks another way. That's the way Chacham has to work. And the Chacham has to work with his nature. Some people, one person might have one meter, a person another meter. Yeah, the Rambam explains that. But the point is that the force behind it, the Chacham that's behind it, knows how to utilize each one he knows how to utilize each situation, each raw material of his nature, knows how to take it and fashion it in such a way that it achieves perfection, that it's aimed towards perfection. That's what the Rambam is saying. Yes or no? Yeah, what the Rambam means about Chassan is he means that when you're born, when a person is born, Tchilas Briyasa, Shel Adam, you can't call him either, really. You can't call him either because he's just raw material. It's only when he gets involved in directing his energies that you can call him a Baal Maila Baal Chassan. He who directs them properly is a Baal Maila. He who directs them improperly is a Baal Chassan. Okay? But directing, it's the directing of the energies which really determines whether there's a Baal Maila Baal Chassan. That's not a natural thing. It's not something which is acquired. It's acquired. Evil is acquired also. It's an acquisition. He comes in contact with the physical world. He's drawn to the physical world. It's an acquisition. A person doesn't become a Rasha so easily. It takes time. Not naturally a Russia. Russia is a development. It's an acquisition. Development of the soul. You have to come across the Bechira line. A man has to make a decision. This is the line of Bechira. Man has to make a decision which way he's going to go, and that's part of his development, and that's why either he goes one direction or the other direction. Basically, there's two directions. That's it. In the Sion by Avraham Avinu, according to the Gruff. If God wanted to see if he's just if this emotion of being kind, of being nice, is it really directed by Chachma? Or is it just an emotion? So we gave him, that was the test. If he can shecht Yitzchak, so then it shows you that he's in control. And if he can't, then it just shows you that it's just an emotion of kindness. That has no value. Yeah. Chovash Rachmav Lassus Ritzonach. That's where the growing. Gro wants to extend it to the concept of Kansipa. Why should you take away? The Gemara says anyone that says that the reason why you have to chase away the mother and take the babies or the Frochim or the Beitzim is because of the fact that kindness. People say this. The Gemara says, now I say that. Kolom Kansipa Yirachamecha Mashtikin Asal. It's not because God is kind to the Kansipa. So the Gro says, no, it's just the opposite. Is really by sending away the mother many times kills herself. So he says, but you're supposed to do that in order to harness the emotion. In order to harness the emotion of Rachmanis. I wouldn't say this to everybody, it's not going to be too popular Pirish. But that's what the Gra says, and that's what he says. But in order to learn to harness the emotion of Rachmanis. That the emotion of Rachmanis should not just be a natural emotion. That's what the Rambam Gaon says. Alright. When we say Rachmanis is good, we don't mean it's not the emotional Rachmanis that's good. It's true Rachmanis. True Rachmanis is different. True Rachmanis means for the benefit of mankind, which means because that's God's will. That's true Rachmanis. True Rachmanis has to work with Seichel. But just an emotional Rachman is no good, because see, the Gemara says the precious Rachman Nachs, that's the worst thing. That was Shaul. So therefore, Rachmanis is not, when you say Rachmanis is good, it's not really true, 100%. You have to qualify by what you mean by Rachmanis. Just to feel Rachmanis is no good. According to the Gra, you're trying to be vicious over here. Trying to do it, the halacha is to do a vicious action. That's the halacha, Achzorius. Rabbeinu Yonah continues, says, She'ena Yerushalach. Continues going back to Rabbeinu Yonah. That's the just the part. The next part of Rabbeinu Yonah says, She'ena Yerushalach, lo sasigeno in lo tigaba. Yes, that we spoke already, by the way. In order to have chachma, a person has to have a certain. He says chachma is not Torah is not given to Yerusha. A person will think that his family big talmid chacham, so he could take it a little bit easier. Doesn't have to work so hard. Right. He says no. Doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way at all. But what is the important thing? The important thing is that what he's saying is that Torah requires a certain attitude of tohu, submission and prostration before the world of Chachma. That's what it requires. Without that basic prerequisite, you can never really achieve Chachma. It's a certain attitude. That's a very important thing. The attitude of mind. You see, Chazal were so concerned with. They knew that Chachma is not a simple thing. They knew Chachma was the greatest thing in the world, but they knew also it's not a simple thing. That's why they gave all this advice, because they knew that to acquire it, a lot of things are necessary. Not a double push it, just go sit and learn. So therefore they say over here what he means is, what he says is She'ena Yerushalach is a different idea. Shani Rishloch is telling you that there's a certain attitude that's necessary before a person can ever become a Lamban. A certain attitude. That attitude is a total submission and prostration before the world of Chachma, which means that he is absolutely nothing. He has to feel that way. He has to feel he's absolutely nothing. If he feels that he has some, that he has some edge in entering this arena of Torah, then he will not be successful. That's what it says. That's what Shani means, Shani Rishloch. Sheni Rishloch means the person must have the feeling that he has no advantage. He's just like anybody else. If he doesn't have that feeling, then he can never achieve Chachma. So I mean, Sheni Rishloch. One of the Chachmei Umos Olam said a similar thing. There was I don't remember who it was. There was a king that wanted to learn mathematics. So this king called. Hired a scholar, great philosopher, to teach him. In those days, philosophers were the ones that knew all the area. Hired a great philosopher, one of the greatest in the world, to teach him math. So the king was very busy. The king started to say, he sat down with him, tried to explain to him, this is a line, this is a point. King said, look, I haven't got time for this. I mean, can you, you shorten it up? I have business, I have things to do. And I'm paying you money, I have to move along over here. So he said, Your Majesty, he says, there are two types of roads in your kingdom. There's a road for the plain man, and then there's a road for the king. That's the royal road. He says, you should all travel different roads. He says, there is no royal road in knowledge. No royal road in knowledge. That's the same. He was mechavin to the. He was mechavin to the chazal. She'ena Yerushalayim. It's the same idea. She'ena Yerushalayim.
King quickly executed him.
The Rabbeinu Yonah says. He says, "Al tachshav lo sachshav." You shouldn't think. V'sama Torah chazeres lachzayn yishalom. You shouldn't think of that chazal. But the Gemara says Torah Chazeres Alasanya Chutam Shulos Lo Meri Nate. So he says you shouldn't think about that. The person will think, he'll tell himself, look, I have a pasuk says Chutam Shulos Lo Meri Nate. Okay, triple ply cord doesn't rip easily. So Chazal say it means that if you have three generations in a row of Talmud Torah, then it'll always come back. It'll always come back. So he says you shouldn't think of that idea. Torah Chazeres Alasanya Shulos. So therefore you have an advantage. You have an advantage. So what does the pasuk mean, really?
Yeah.
Most people get very excited to see three generations. Ah, Torah Chazeres Alasanya. Now we can take it easy. Now we can take it easy. What is,
he doesn't say that they're not. He didn't say.
We have turned ourselves our shines. Our shines well doesn't mean it's not a guarantee anyway. It's not a guarantee. It means because it doesn't mean that there's no guarantee. On the contrary, the Gemara says that Neymar Bonim Shel Tamidei Chachamim Einam Tamidei Chachamim. The Gemara says, why is it that many times you see that the sons of Tamidei Chachamim are not Tamidei Chachamim? The Gemara says Shalayom Retar Birusha. One of the things the Gemara says. One, the Gemara gives several answers. The Gemara gives one answer, says that people shouldn't say that Torah is mitna birusha. That's what the Gemara says. Interesting thing. What does it mean that people shouldn't say that Torah is given birusha? It's interesting. What does Chazal mean? And that's why this person, that's why this Talmud Chacham has to suffer? I mean, that his son should be in Amoritz? So people shouldn't say that? Where's the justice? Where's the justice? And what's the answer? Now, the answer is what Chazal mean is that many times what happens is that the child feels that it was given, it should be, that it's birusha. And therefore, he doesn't really approach it properly. And since he doesn't, so he doesn't become a Talmud Chacham. And then people learn something from that. What do they learn? They learn that Torah is not given to Rishon. That's what Chazal means. I think what it means is Chutam Shilashim Lomayinak. I may be wrong. I mean, I'm just working it out now, really. But what it means like this: that when a person learns Torah, a person spends his life learning Torah. So he benefits himself, but it's not just that he benefits himself. What he does really is he sets up a model for other people. The fact that he's a Talmud Chacham casts a certain influence on other people. Like people used to say that just that they knew that the Vilna Gaon was alive had an effect on them. Listen, there's such a person in the world. Okay? Mm. Person's Lima Torah is not just for himself. Person's Lima Torah has an effect on others. Now, it has an effect on others, but the emotions of people are such that people feel more closely tied to their family directly than to the rest of Klal Yisrael. That's the way. That's a natural feeling. There's a such thing as family pride. I mean, people feel a certain closer relationship. It's even halachim at Sarchal Tzalim. So it means when a person learns Torah, he creates a certain influence. The influence is towards everybody, but more essentially it's an influence towards his own immediate family. It means that the fact that he was a Talmud Chacham has an effect on them. They identify with the Talmud Chacham and therefore becomes a thing, a source of pride, and it naturally draws them more towards Torah. So what the Chazal is saying is that if you have a Chutam Shulash, means that you have three generations, it has a greater effect. You see, he said from the beginning of the pasuk, Tev Mashnayim and Echad. Tev Mashnayim and Echad doesn't mean that two are twice as good as one. Two are 100 times as good as one. Yeah, it's a different Tev Mashnayim and Echad. Of course, two is better than one. It's simple mathematics. No, what it means is that you can't compare two with one. Two is not two times one. Two is much more. That's right. Geometric progression. So the same thing is Chutam Shulash Lo B'Meri Notek. What it means is that the triplicate cord is not simply like three separate strands. Much more, it's much stronger. So it means that if a person learns, so he creates a situation for future generations, because he's known as in the family as an individual who represented certain ideas, certain ideals. So people are affected, people are influenced by that. His offspring, they're influenced by that fact. But if you have three generations in a row, the effect is so great that it will always. It'll always come back. That's what it means. It means the effect. That's what it means. Chut on the shulash. It means it's not just three strands, but the effect is triple. It means it's much, much more than just three times. It establishes among the family a certain. As it says, Maaser Halachsan Yishalach. Means that they become a family of Torah, and that effect affects future generations. So that those the people, their offspring, are affected that way. And they respect it, and it casts a certain influence upon them, so Torah will come back to them. That's what I think it means. Otherwise, one individual in the family is a little Talmud Chacham, so he's, the family represents other things. He stands there one. The three is there.
In other words,
you have to know where the psychological point is, where it actually becomes a part of the family. It's an essential, something essential in the...